feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant. And you're wearing the wrong logo right now, Rob. I'm here with Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and the NFL. Get your Wake Up Call shirt, you'll be all set up. That's all right. But Rob Drummond and myself, Dan Satora, here with you every single game week for Syracuse football. Unfortunately, this year it'll end a little bit sooner than some people wanted, but those seasons happen. You can't do much with a team when you have more than five offensive linemen injured, as well as playing four quarterbacks, all three freshman quarterbacks, and Allen Edward, who is another true freshman quarterback, is still not with the team. So if they had to go deeper than four quarterbacks, they would have went to wide receiver Jared West and punter Riley Dixon. So it's been a very interesting year, and I think anybody that lives in Syracuse knows that it never can be smooth. It always has to be interesting. So there's a lot to talk about, but you had a pretty interesting day, so we'll start with that, Rob. Is that you just flew in today? You've been up since probably 5 o'clock in the morning or something like that. Now, what did your past week entail? Because I know you got to see a lot of games out there.
Oh, it's interesting. With my company, I was granted the ability to be able to be a guest at the Wisconsin-Nebraska game and the Green Bay Packers-Philadelphia Eagles game this past weekend. You know, so I flew to Wisconsin and actually was allowed to be a fan for those games, and just the experience, the atmosphere, the nostalgia. You know, I found out that Syracuse is a larger city than Green Bay, believe it or not. But you know what, just to meet the fans, you know, the Wisconsin-Nebraska game, to meet the fans of the Packers-Eagles games, and it's just that, you know what, I sit back here and I look at Syracuse myself, and being a hometown boy and someone who loves Syracuse was born and raised here. We gotta work hard out, because the way they do it is the correct way to do it, and we don't do it the correct way. And I said to myself, it's like, you know what, at some point I'm gonna go up and talk to Darryl Groth and say to Darryl Groth, it's like, you know what, what can I do as a former player, as a former hometown person from Syracuse, do to help you improve, you know, the relationship between the city and the university? Because what I saw out there is not what we have here. Out there, I had the most fun I've ever had just dealing with their fans. And here, it's just like, it's a struggle. But granted, winning, you know, cures all ills. But it's like, you know what, at some point, it still has to become, I mean, those fans were loyal, whether the teams are losing or not, whether the teams are going to the Super Bowl or not, whether the teams are going to bowl games or not. It was just a different atmosphere. And that's what I saw out there and what I experienced is what I wanted.
When you look at the experience and you say winning cures all, which happens in a lot of cases, you know, Florida State a few years back didn't have the fans that were hanging around for the entire game. You know, I have one of my closest friends was an alum there, and he told me, he said, you know, Dan, you went to a game last, because I went to Syracuse, Florida State last year in Tallahassee, and we were talking about it, and I said, you know, when you were beating Syracuse by 30, 40, 50 points, nobody got up of 80, 90,000 people. And he said it wasn't always like that, but Syracuse, it seems like it hasn't been like that in a very long time, and I think the longer that you're away from it, the more time it's going to take to get back to it. And when I was a kid, I remember going to the Carrier Dome. It was the Loud House. My dad would bring me to a game. game. I couldn't hear. I mean, he'd be sitting right next to me talking to me. We couldn't hear each other. We had to repeat ourselves 3, 4, 5 times because it was so loud. The fans were always in it, and very rarely did fans leave. And if they left, it was 2, 3, 10, 20, not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 thousand. So what do you think it has really attributed to this? Is it just losing, or is it something else? Because it seems like it's been a very long time. I mean, I was in college the last time that I really felt like people were kind of sort of hanging around for a Syracuse game, even when they're losing.
No, I can't sit here and say I could pinpoint it, but for the simple fact, the experience I had when I was out there, it just seemed like, even from the standpoint of tailgating, they talked about tailgating as much as they talked about the game. And it's just the food we had. I mean, I'd never really had bratwurst before, you know, cooked like that. I mean, it's just the experience where fans were coming by. I mean, they would mingle together. They would talk together about the game. So to me, it just felt like the tailgate experience was just as important as a football game experience. And just fans, you know, cheering for the team and just being proud of the team, and whether it was like win or lose, it was just a different atmosphere. Granted, they had 55,000 undergrads, I found out, at the University of Wisconsin. But even after the game, you know, yes, they won a big game. Yes, I sat there and I saw history made where I saw a running back rush for 409 yards and 4 touchdowns, which was amazing to me. Then I had a chance to talk to the young man after the game, and what a very humble, down-to-earth, you know, low-key young man who just went out there and played his heart out. But out there, they love football. Football, there's a heart and their passion. Granted, Wisconsin basketball is pretty good too, but it just seemed like all the fans out there just love their sports. They love their sports player. They love their community. They just love being a part of that West Wisconsin atmosphere. And that's what That's what I felt, even as an outsider there. They truly, truly love their, you know, love their program, love their sports, love their hometown, love their team, and they love to cheer for the team. It just seems a whole lot different when I come here. Even the tailgating here is entirely different here. We cook, you know, burgers and hot dogs. Out there was just something I never experienced before. But, you know, it was something I enjoyed and something I definitely would love to go back to one day.
When you see how involved fans get at tailgating, I mean, when you talk about the type of food that they're cooking, they try to make it, you know, I feel a little bit more authentic. You know, you would think if you're going to a Texas game that you're going to have some type of barbecue. Maybe they're making ribs outside. They're not just making burgers and hot dogs. But, you know, I really do agree with you that I think tailgating here is kind of few and far between. There's a few spots in the parking lot that nobody will park, and they'll take out a certain area. But you got to understand, when there's 5 people here and 10 people here and 2 people here and 5 people here for Syracuse in the dome parking lots, when you go down to Florida State, you can't walk. They have to close down part of the road at Florida State. There's just not, and I know people are saying, well, this is the number one team. They won 26 games straight. But their fans come out, and their fans really make a day of it. And there's people that won't even go to the game, but they'll get lawn chairs, and they'll watch all the cars go by, and they'll wave and have people beat back at them. And they'll tailgate from across the street, not even going to the game. So, you know, obviously it's cold up here. I understand that. But it's cold in Wisconsin, and people still go out and they tailgate. And it's cold in Denver, and people still go out and they tailgate. So what is it about the society, the community here? Is it just that losing element, or is there something else? Because it almost seems like when you're tailgating, that's a game in and of itself, and then people go to the game, whereas here, there's some people that do, some people that don't, but it really isn't like a whole community event. It's kind of just like a couple different parties.
You know, that's the million-dollar question. You know, unfortunately, as a player, when I played in my early years, you know, I never got a chance to get tailgate and experience the fans outside the dome, you know, because I was always playing. You know, and then when I played in the NFL, you know, or played in the CFL, I never really got the chance or experience to be able to come back and go tailgate with fans because I was always playing. So now I'm in a situation where I'm seeing a losing team, and all I can do is feel the vibe, feel the energy, feel the, you know, the what's going on, you know, per se, of the fans. And it wasn't the same experience that I've had here before tailgating that I had down there. There was more family atmosphere. You know, they were having fans. I would see people walk over, people out of the blue, just walk over and start talking to people. They were offering food. They would just talk about the game. They would just talk about things that are going on, things of that nature. We're here in Syracuse. It's just like it's a different atmosphere. It's just like, you know, you get a bunch of people who are tailgating, and it's just that group of people. They don't interact with anybody outside. None of the fans walking up. They're always booing fans, things of that nature. Whereas I sat there in Wisconsin, and I saw fans walking by, and they said there were fans in Nebraska, and they called them over. They had food with them. And, you know, they talk shop. They talk about their books. They talk football. They talk life. They talk about their kids. And I was like, wow. This is how it's supposed to be. He's like, I don't think we do this like this in Syracuse, but you know, it's, as I said before, we just have a lot of work if you want to get to the caliber of being in the SEC, Big Ten, Pac-10. The way they tailgate, the way they have fun, the way it's a party, the way the city's involved, but not just the university, but the community also, it's just a different world.
One of the things, and obviously we'll talk about Syracuse here with Rob Drummond, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Boreo's 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those listening in on wakeupcalldt.com and the free Wake Up Call DT app. Melvin Gordon is the running back that you were talking about with Wisconsin. A record-setting day, 408 yards, 4 touchdowns, longest run was 68 yards. Obviously, you played running back for a very long time. You are, which some people still don't know to this day, only you and Ernie Davis are running backs that have ever had an undefeated season at Syracuse. Ernie Davis in 59, and then you, I believe, in 87. So when you look at everything that you did and the success that you had, when you see a talent like Melvin Gordon, whether he plays for Syracuse, Wisconsin, Bowling Green, doesn't matter, what can you say about his talent and what he was doing right and kind of the caliber of an athlete that you saw for 400 yards, 4 touchdowns?
The one thing I noticed immediately from that young man is that, you know, he had the desire, the will, the passion, the heart to be able to go out there and approach each play as if it was his last play, because, you know, it could be. You never know in football. Any given time you go out there, look at Gurley. You know, he comes back, the Georgia running back. He comes back, has a good first half. The second half, he tears his ACL, so his season's over now. Jeopardizes his draft stock in the NFL draft, because I don't think it will, but, you know, so any given day, the career can be taken from you. But this young man went out there, he played with passion, he played with heart, he played with desire. And what people don't realize is that he broke the record, and he still had a quarter to go. He played 3 quarters, and he broke that record. And they sat him down in the fourth quarter, and the other young man came in to play the game, so... You know, it's an testament. Talking to him after the game, he's like, you know what? I could have went out there and got a lot more yards, but what for? You know, I want to put my team, put myself in a position to make my team successful going into a bowl game and win the rest of our games. You know, and that says a lot about that young man. He could have sat there and shattered the record. He could have probably rushed for 500 plus yards, but this young man wanted to rest. And, you know, he understood that they were up in the game big. It wasn't his time to go out there to give the other team, the other players on his team, some game experience. You know, and I can respect that from a player. He's a team player.
When you get an opportunity to talk to somebody like that, when you're talking to Melvin Gordon and he's discussing with you his thoughts on everything, I mean, you've been able to talk to a lot of athletes around the country, around the world, because what you do with your system of reps, which I think some people don't know, with you being a Syracuse alum and also the NFL and the CFL, that you have a company that is tracking athletes of numerous sports, not just football, all the time, and you're dealing with coaches, and the information that you're providing is assisting in recruiting to find the best players. So when you look at the specimen of Gordon and then you hear his attitude, what can you say about the young man that he is, because you've had the opportunity to train and speak with so many young men and women? What can you say about Gordon and kind of how he was with you?
My first thought is he's not Jameson Lindsay, you know, so, and that's a plus. No, but he's just a young man who loves the game, understands the opportunity he has, but realizes that he has to go out there and work hard in order to achieve that opportunity. Nothing's going to be given to him. That's why he works hard every single play, whereas someone like a Jameson Winston just takes everything for granted. It's good in this day and age of these young athletes who are put on such pedestals, you know, for a young man as talented as he is, you know, as marquee as he is, you know, that to have the intangibles to be able to go out there and be a good role model. Because I sat there and talked to a young man who's going to be successful in life, whether he plays football or whether he does something else, you know, because he understood how talented he was. He understood his greatness. He understood, you know, the ability he had to be able to go out there and probably be a first-round pick or a second-round pick. But the one thing about him I truly enjoyed was he was humble. He was able been talking to everyone. He signed autographs all day long for the people who wanted his autographs, and he didn't think he was better than anybody else. He just seemed like a young man who enjoyed to play the game. He was fortunate enough to be very, very talented at it, but he was very humble for the simple fact that God gave him the ability to be able to go out there and do that, and he respected that.
When you look at finding respect and doing the right thing, when you look at the players on Syracuse, we've talked a lot before we take our first step aside here from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those listening in on wakeupcalldt.com and the Wake Up Call DT app. Rob, we've talked about character guys. We have talked about passionate guys. Someone who's going to step up for this team, and instead of pointing their finger, they're going to put the thumb to themselves and say, listen, I got to do it. I have to make a play. Now that we're almost through the Syracuse football season, win, lose, or draw, who do you see with the thumb to their chest saying, I'm going to do it. I have to do it. Who are some of those leaders, if you found those leaders on Syracuse this year?
You know what? I'll have to watch this last game to answer that question a lot better. You know, right now I can sit here and tell you from the simple fact that A.J. Long is the type of person, you know, as a true freshman quarterback who really puts the onus on himself. I can tell you right now, he's beating himself up for the simple fact that he feels that he could have done a lot more for the team this year to get them to a bowl game. But the young man has to understand, you know, it's a team sport. No one individual can do it. You know, we love his heart, we love his passion, we love his drive to be able to go out there and want to win games, you know, but it just wasn't this year. So, you know, right now they just have to heal up. You know, these young kids have to go out there now and get experience because, as you know, we only have two more games left and there's no bowl implications, there's no bowl, there's two games left. So at this point, yes, you would be singing the seniors a swan song and have them go out there and be able to play these last games and do well and just ride on to the sunset in Syracuse, but you also have to think of the future. And our future is these young guys coming up right now. You have to give them experience, but get them to be able to go out there and have the experience of playing in games going into spring ball, because right now we have to concentrate on, yes, we have these two games left, but spring ball is the most important thing because these two games mean anything.
That is Rob Drummond talking about Syracuse here with me and so much more. Dan Satora, of course, with Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and the NFL, with Wake Up Call with Dan Satora live from Borio's Restaurant. Every game week for Syracuse, they're on the road, doesn't matter. We're here with you, providing you Syracuse football when you're going to have to watch it on the television if you're not heading out to Pittsburgh this week. You and I are going to talk about a lot of different things. The college football rankings, why Florida State is undefeated but not number one in the rankings, as well as Syracuse, three freshman quarterbacks, what you can take away from a season like this, and how it affects fans to have last season be two games at home, this season be final two games on the road, and how that back and forth could affect fans and could affect building the fan base and having the tailgating and having everything that we talked about if scheduling is causing an issue for Syracuse fans. That's all coming up here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora on WakeUpCallDT.com, as well as Wake Up Call DT app, and live here every Syracuse football game week with Rob Drummond, and we'll also be doing some other specialty shows. Did some over the summer as well. Rob Drummond, Syracuse, CFL, and the NFL. And, of course, myself, Dan Satora, broadcasting in my hometown again. Was in Orlando, Scranton, all up and down the East Coast, and happy to be back here for the last few seasons covering Syracuse and so much more. We've talked so much off the air just now about college football overall, the rankings, the fact that there's a college football playoff now, that it's not a computerized thing, that there's people in a room that are figuring this out, that are trying to be fair, that have a lot of criteria. And you and I had a debate over a lot of different things, so I think it's only fair to bring that, even though Syracuse is not in the college football playoff ranking talks, nor are they going to a bowl game. In the future, whether it's Syracuse or whoever, it's important, the conversation we're about to have, because it could affect Syracuse in the long run. And that is kind of the criteria. We'll start there with choosing those top four teams. Now, Florida State is 10-0, but Florida State is considered to be the third best team right now in the nation based on the people that are voting on the college football playoff board, if you want to call it that, to figure out these rankings. Do you agree or disagree with Florida State 10-0? The two teams above them have one loss. Do you agree with them being third spot, or do you feel that they should be higher? How do you kind of justify what's going on right now?
I mean, I completely agree. 10-0 means nothing. You have to look at the quality of how they play the game. Florida State's the defending national champions, and basically in just about 3, 4, 5 of the games they played this year, they've had to come from behind against pedestrian teams. Whereas these other teams, whereas Alabama goes out there and plays a strong SEC conference, and with the exception of a slip-up this year earlier against Ole Miss, have dominated and proven that they're a strong team playing against these teams. Oregon the same way. With one slip-up this year, have gone out there and basically dominated and proven that they're a top-tier superior team. Whereas Florida State doesn't do that. Florida State goes out there and plays against a team like the likes of a Miami, a team that they should handle easily. Granted, it's an interstate rivalry, but that's a team that should be easy. And they have to come from behind by almost 2 touchdowns to win that game. Same thing with the Louisville, and I can go on and on with Florida State. Florida State is just the strong team they were last year, and the pollsters and the ones who are making these rankings are rewarding them for that, and it's not good what they're rewarding.
When we look at teams like Alabama, Oregon, teams that are ranked higher right now than Florida State in the college football playoff rankings, we'll start with Alabama. I think it's clear that if you beat number one and you're in the top four, that there's a good chance that you're going to jump and go to number one. It makes sense that a team would do that. It makes sense that Alabama, when Mississippi State is number one, that they could get to that spot because they defeated them. But when we look at the rest of their season, they lost to Ole Miss, which you talked about, and that team was ranked at the time. They defeated LSU, but it took overtime to do so. So when you look at Alabama, they're not the defending champion. They have lost to a ranked team. Florida State hasn't done that. We talk about close games. Alabama had a close game with LSU. The only reason why Alabama is where they are right now as far as the rankings go, is it in your mind because they beat Mississippi State?
It's completely in my mind because they beat Mississippi State. But I said coming into the season, I thought Alabama was the number one team in the country. Just by, the coaching intangibles, the running game intangibles, a steady quarterback run, albeit young, but a steady quarterback earlier on in the year, the defense plays, all out, they just smother teams. It's going to be interesting. So you can say to yourself, for the simple fact that even if Alabama had been ranked fifth going into this, you got TCU behind them. I think they're a better team than TCU. I think if you put Oregon, put it this way, if you put any of these teams in the SEC, a lot of these teams wouldn't be playing in the playoff contention right now, because the SEC is a monster conference, as everyone knows. You can sit here and say what you want, it's the best conference in the land. And a lot of these teams wouldn't survive going through this conference. Even Ohio State is sitting on the outside looking in right now at the pitch position. Everybody, you hear them balking about how they should be here because they only lost, I forget who they lost, Virginia Tech and blah, blah, but it's like, you know what? You put Ohio State in the SEC, and Ohio State probably has two or three losses. So, you know, it goes without saying. It depends on who you play. Year in and year out, the SEC always plays Monster Conference. Just look how many teams they have ranked in the top 25.
One of the things with the SEC, there's a couple things I want to go off of what you said, Rob, speaking here on Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those listening in on wakeupcalldt.com and the free Wake Up Call DT app. The SEC right now, there's an east and a west side to this thing. Missouri and Georgia have clinched the opportunity to go to a bowl, so obviously they have the opportunity to do so. There's only one team in the east that's out of contention for the postseason, that's Vanderbilt. Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Kentucky, all in contention. They all need one more victory. And then when you look in the West, Alabama, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Auburn, Texas A&M, LSU are all bowl eligible. Arkansas needs one game. So when we look at the entire SEC, all but one team may be playing in a bowl game this season. So when you look at a Mississippi State and you look at an Alabama, can you put any of these other Florida States and Ohio States and TCUs above a team like Alabama or a Mississippi State based on what I just told you, where we could see almost the entire SEC in a bowl game somewhere this season, and most likely a lot of them in a pretty good one?
As I said, currently, at the time, Florida State has not been the team that's ranked in the top 25. Right, they beat teams before when Clemson was ranked high when they beat them. Notre Dame was ranked high when they beat them. But at the end of the day, what's Notre Dame ranked now? What's Clemson ranked now? You know, what are any of these teams that they beat ranked now? It's not how you start; it's how you finish. These teams weren't strong in the beginning, you know, and they faded. Now, the ranking comes from the college coaches' perception of how good this team is going to be. You know, and once the season plays out, we see how good these teams are. None of these teams were good enough to be in the top 25. Whereas Alabama, Oregon, and Mississippi State all have played teams who are ranked higher, or at least ranked in the top 25.
One of the teams that Florida State did beat that is still ranked college football rankings top 25 is Clemson at 22, which I believe is where they were when they played Florida State. Florida State had to come back in that game, but granted, they had to do it with a situation where they had to, you know, Florida State had to do it with a backup quarterback, and they didn't have Jameis Winston. So when you look at that, do you kind of attribute, can you connect some of that to it and say, you know what, they played number two Clemson, you talk about rankings, Clemson's still number 22 in college football playoff now, and Florida State beat them with their backup quarterback without Jameis Winston. So does that game kind of show you, even though you've said SEC above Florida State, does it kind of plead the case a little bit for Florida State saying, listen, we didn't have our best player, and we beat Clemson, and Clemson is still in the top 25?
Okay, how do you think Syracuse would fare against Alabama or an Oregon or Mississippi State? We played, you know, for a while, we played Florida State toe-to-toe at home. You know, and the poor eventually succumbing to them. So I just said, you know, Florida State is not that dominant team that goes out there and put teams out that should take away. They should have beaten Syracuse with the talent they had by 5, 6, 7 touchdowns, but they didn't. Granted, it's a testament to Syracuse how good they can be, but you know what? When you're a top-tier caliber team, when you're ranked, and you know, that high in the country, like back even when I played, okay, every team that we played, we were supposed to dominate, we destroyed. That's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to leave teams around and leave without doubt. Right now, they're leaving teams without doubt. It's just, you know, the committee sees that. You know, when you're supposed to, even as like a prize fighter, you have the opportunity to take an opponent out, take them out, and Florida State's not doing it. So they're not the dominant team to deserve that higher rating, I think.
Do you like the fact, though, that now we're looking at the college football climate, and it's not just about, well, this team has no losses, and this team has no losses, and this team has no losses, but they're TCU or they're Boise State, so we can't put them in it. The College Football Playoff Committee has said You're 9-1. You're 9-1. You're better than the 10-0 Florida State. Do you like the change? Do you like the environment? Do you like what we're seeing now? That we have a committee that can look at all these teams, and any other year in the BCS, Florida State's 10-0. Florida State's in first place. Do you like the fact that they are really scrutinizing, going throughout the schedule and saying, you know what? These two teams have a loss, and they should play as a number one and two seeds, whereas in the past, if you have one loss, you're not playing in the championship game.
I mean, I like the simple fact that they're sitting there and looking at the entirety, I should say, of football. It is not just a win-loss record, because a win-loss record means absolutely nothing. You could be 11-0, you know, and have played no one. Look in the past, Boise State. You used to go 11-0, 12-0 in our conference, but we're never really ranked high. But who did Boise State play? You put Boise State in the SEC, they probably have two or three wins all year long. So I like the simple fact that the committee is sitting there and doing their due diligence and taking the time to sit there and pick out the team that they feel throughout the course of the year that have done enough in their play, done enough in their, you know, in their scoring and their wins, losses to warrant being ranked so high. They had it right. I said it before the game. I said it to a friend of mine. You know, if Alabama beats Mississippi State, Alabama should be one, Oregon should stay two, Florida State should stay three, and Mississippi State should not drop no lower than four. And I called it right, you know, because those are the four best teams in the conference right now. Granted, Ohio State is playing some of the best football. They're on the outside looking in. I think Ohio State should be ahead of TCU, but just for the simple fact of the strength of their schedule, because they beat Michigan State, a highly rated team who I thought was one of the better teams this year. But you know what? I think the committee is doing it right with football this year, and I can't wait for it actually to get to a 12-game or 16-game playoff systems for college football, because then we don't have to worry about all this ranking right now.
One of the teams that you brought up, TCU, they were in the top four. Now, they're not in the top four, but they're close. TCU did lose a game. They lost to Baylor this season. They were able to beat Oklahoma in a very close game, West Virginia in a one-point game. Kansas State, they blew out. Well, they beat by 21 points. So, we can call it a blowout, three touchdowns. When you look at TCU, what do they say to you? Because the Big 12 is not the same as the SEC or even the ACC as far as teams that are eligible for a bowl season, and Baylor has been screaming from the rooftops, listen, we beat them. So why is TCU getting all the credit for this? Where does TCU kind of line up in everything for you? Because I understand your respect for Mississippi State and Alabama. We'll talk about Oregon in a minute. Florida State is in the ACC and they're 10-0, so you can't really rule them out. But where does TCU stand? Because they switched. They went to the Big 12. They said, you know what, let's have the fire. Well, you know, put us in a situation where we're going to be thrown to the wolves and we're going to do something with it. So where do you have them right now, and how do you kind of view a TCU team that is willing to take on the pressure but still lost the game, but they lost to Baylor?
Well, I think TCU is on the outside looking in. The simple fact that, just look at strength of schedule. You know, the simple fact that Mississippi State is still ranked ahead of TCU. Mississippi State, as you said before, you made it very, very, very poignant. The simple fact that all but one SEC team right now does not have a shot at going to a bowl game. So that says a lot about that conference, the depth of that conference, from top to bottom, how strong they are, how week in and week out it's going to be a battle. But the simple fact that TCU lost to a Baylor team that's ranked high also. Other than that, TCU really plays no one ranked. The Big 12 conference is not that strong a conference. So you can look at the schedule and the depth of the team that these schools play and understand that, you know what, Iowa State plays in a tougher conference. The SEC, Alabama, Mississippi State playing a tougher conference. Oregon plays in a tougher conference. These teams, the way they go out there and the way they put points on the board and they score points and they win games, they dominate these teams. A great team, and a team that should be ranked higher in these polls than the college coaches. The teams that go out there and dominate and take care of business like it's supposed to do. TCU's on a team that's doing that. They struggled this past weekend before they finally pulled it in. It'd be like us going out there against Colgate when we played back in 87 when they're defeated. They're struggling. We beat Colgate 57-7. We did what we were supposed to do. And we beat Colgate 57-3. Now that's a problem. That means we're not the dominant team that was going out there that everyone thought we were. But the simple fact that we showed we were a dominant team is what they're looking for.
I want to go to Oregon in the Pac-12 in the North Division, which they're in. Stanford, California, Washington, Oregon State, available to get to a bowl game still. They can be eligible. They're not yet. Oregon is the only one. Washington State's out. In the South, USC, UCLA, Arizona State, Arizona, Utah, all in. Colorado out. Oregon is playing Colorado, and they only have a couple games left in the regular season. They're playing one of the two teams in the Pac-12 that has no chance of going to a bowl game. So where does Oregon land in your mind? They're number two right now, but their conference is not as strong as the SEC as far as who's bowl eligible right now. It's not as strong as the Big 12 or TCU is as far as who's bowl eligible right now, or the ACC as far as who's bowl eligible right now. So how do we look at Oregon knowing that they're playing Colorado, even if they kill them, even if they go in there and they win 57-7, how can we justify Oregon if TCU wins commandingly and if Alabama, Florida State, Mississippi State keep doing their work? Does Oregon deserve to be there, or at that point do we say, all right, Ohio State, all right, TCU, why don't you come in?
No, you have to look at Oregon's schedule. Now look at the ranked teams they play. You know, for the simple fact that, you know, I can tell you right now, not knowing the schedule they played this year, you know, Arizona State is a very good aggressive team that's ranked in the top 25. Arizona, very aggressive, good team that's ranked in the top 25. UCLA is a strong team, maybe not ranked in the top 25, they're a very, 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 very good team. Stanford, a team that had a great defense the past couple of years. They've got a very, very good defensive-minded coach, who's a strong team. Granted, they're probably 5-5 this year, but they're another good team. So you just look at the strength of schedule and the teams they play and the caliber and quality of teams that got them to the point where they are. There's a reason that this committee has a one-loss Oregon team ahead of a Florida State team. You know, Florida State plays down to the competition. Oregon rises above their competition and usually dominates them and beats them.
We go to the ACC, where Syracuse is. It's kind of an interesting ACC now. Syracuse obviously was part of the Big East, and they had their good moments and their not-so-great moments there. The Big East, for all intents and purposes, is now the American Athletic Conference, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But with the ACC, Syracuse in the Atlantic Division is one of two teams, themselves and Wake Forest, that will not be bowl eligible this season. Florida State, Clemson, Louisville, Boston College, NC State are. In the Coastal Division, Georgia Tech, Duke, and Miami, Florida are. North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, and Virginia all have a chance, if they win a game or their last two games win out, that they're going to be bowl eligible. So 12 ACC teams out of 14 have the opportunity to be bowl eligible. We talk about the strength of the SEC, but it's only one game of difference between the SEC having all but one team that can make it. ACC has all but two. Where is the ACC in your mind? Because you've talked about strength of schedule in Florida State, but we're looking at a conference that's going to send all but almost the entire same amount that SEC can send to the bowl season.
How many of those teams are ranked in the top 25? How many of those teams are ranked in the top 25? You can have five wins and beat up, you know, the St. Mary's School of the Blind and the Capricorn School of the Deaf, and it means absolutely nothing. But when you're week in and week out playing teams that are ranked in the top 25, you're playing basically for, you know, life or death, which is what they do in the South. It's a whole entirely different world. You know, you're playing the likes of a Georgia, the likes of a Ole Miss, the likes of a Mississippi State, the likes of Auburn, the likes of Alabama. You know, these are all teams that are at one point this year Auburn ranked not just in the top 25, in the top 10. So the ACC can sit here and say, oh, our teams are going to bowl games, you have five wins, you get into the top 25, because that's where national championships are won. So I mean, to sit here and say their schedule is great, and like, they're getting teams in, that's all well and good. Hey, we were 6-6 last year, we went to the bowl game too. We're not that good of a team, but you know, we're on the rise, we're a rebuilding team. But the simple fact that when you're a dominant team, you have to play dominant competition week in and week out, it says a lot. And that's why these teams are ranked a whole lot higher, and that's why these teams are playing in possible New Year's Day bowls in the national championship, because they're ranked in the top 25. The objective of a football program or a football organization in playing is not just win. At some point, you want to get into that top 25, because you're always proud to crack, like Duke. Duke cracked the top 25, and I was glad for them. But I watched that Duke game against Syracuse, and I said to myself, they're horrible. They're not a top 25 team. They were destroyed by most of the teams in the top 25 that they played them. No, but the simple fact that I was glad that they made it, because they're an ACC team. But when you can get in the top 15, the top 10, the top 5, now you're working yourself up. Now you're a dominant team, not just in your conference, but amongst the country.
when you look at the SEC, they beat up on each other. But somehow, see, this is, I think, the conundrum, so to speak, of college football when you think of the SEC. They can beat the heck out of each other, beat each other so they get the win, but then beat somebody else so there's a loss here and a loss there, but a win here and a win there. No matter how much the SEC beats up on one another, they all almost end up bowl eligible. What does that say to you? Because, I mean, it seems like such a strange thing. You know, you beat up on Wake Forest, they're out. You beat up on Syracuse, they're out. NC State, outside of this year, last year they got beat up on, they're out. You beat up on Arkansas, that's 1-5 in the conference, still has a chance. LSU, that's 3-4, is bowl eligible. Texas A&M, that's 3-4. Kentucky, that's 2-6 in the conference. Tennessee, that's 2-4. South Carolina, that's 3-5. Florida, that's 4-4. Where Florida had their glory days with Tim Tebow most recently. When you look at the SEC beating the heck out of each other, but still having enough wins to be bowl eligible, what does that tell you? Because it's a very strange occurrence when you can get beat up, but you're still going to be in the 15th round of the play.
No, it just says it's a strong conference from top to bottom. And on any given day, any team can win. It's just that, you know, athletes in the South are a different breed. Athletes in the South, Midwest, and West are just a different breed of athletes. They live, breathe, you know, and sleep, you know, sports. Whereas in the Northeast, we're very good athletes, but it's not a lifestyle for us. It's an activity, or it's a game. For down in, it's life. So those teams down there, not that we don't take it serious, we take it seriously also, but for them, it's life or death situation. It's like Coach Mack used to always tell us, when we went down to play Navy, he's like, you know what, guys, you got to go out there and go that extra mile, because you're playing against a bunch of guys who, if someone threw a grenade around to protect their partners or protect their mates, they would dive in that bomb and, you know, and take that bomb themselves. And, you know, and hit home the guys, just realizing that for them, this is about life or death, and for us, it's just an activity or a game. You know, so that's the type of caliber, the type of mentality you have when you go down and play teams in the South, the Midwest, or the West that we don't have up here. That one day when we finally does click in. It clicked in back in the mid to late 80s and the 90s when I played. But right now, it's just we've lost that mojo. We've lost that the desire to understand. That's what it takes to play the game of football.
Before we take our second break here, wake up call with Dan Satora live from Boreo's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. For those of you listening in on wakeupcalldt.com and the free Wake Up Call DT app available through Apple and Google Play. When we look at the old Big East, I think it's only fair to do this because there's some nostalgia that people have in Syracuse. Some people will never really sit well with Syracuse being in the ACC. So, you know, you play where Syracuse was independent. But for Syracuse to go from independent to be in the Big East to now be in the ACC, sometimes it has that weird feeling because you think of Duke, you think of UNC, you don't think of Syracuse, you think of Wake Forest. So in the American Athletic Conference, which is what the Big East used to be, Memphis, Cincinnati, Central Florida, East Carolina, those teams are all bowl eligible. George O'Leary has been at Central Florida for over a decade. He's put together good programs all the time. He had not lost a game in the conference, in the American Athletic Conference, for a while. Did well in Conference USA before losing this season inside. And East Carolina with Ruffin McNeil is a team that nobody wanted to cover, nobody wanted to care about. They broke into the top 25, and they've had one heck of an effort this season. When you look at what the old Big East was becoming, even though Syracuse isn't there, can you find respect for Central Florida and for East Carolina, knowing what they're doing and what they're trying to do? Because they're the baby of college football. They went from being one of the oldest, not oldest conferences, one of the most respected conferences in the last 20 some odd years, to being a 2-year-old conference. So can you find respect for Central Florida as well as East Carolina, Cincinnati, and Memphis still to this day?
I mean, I think you can find respect for any organization trying to better themselves in football. But for the simple fact, and really honestly, the football, from my standpoint, the Big East is a basketball conference. I mean, football just tagged along, and football just called it like we rode the coattails because it was the Georgetown, the Villanova, the St. John's, you know, the Seton Hall, the Providence. I mean, and that's the Big East was known for its basketball. Granted, we had Miami come along later, Virginia Tech, and we had some West Virginia, we had some great rivals later on, but it was still always a basketball conference to me. You know, like, as you said before, we were independent, so eventually things change. You know, you have to adapt to change. The quicker you learn and understand how to adapt to change, just move forward, the easier you are. Right now, the Big East, as far as Syracuse is concerned, is behind us. We're at the ACC now, so now it's time to make our step and do what we need to do in the ACC. But right now, I see the Big East Conference eventually one day, you know, making a name for themselves. But right now, I can care less because it's not my conference. My conference is the ACC. They do well, great. I know Coach O'Leary, because Coach O'Leary was the coach at Syracuse when I was there. He was the line coach, you know, and I always wish him well. You know, but the simple fact is we don't play that conference right now. So you have to worry about our conference is not there. As I said before, I always remember Syracuse as a basketball conference because it was a basketball conference when I played. We were independents. And when McNabb played, they were the Big East. But I accepted it. But it's like, you know, I still always see them as, you know, an independent conference. But in the NAACC now, it's still the Big East, former Big East basketball conference.
And lastly, before we take that step aside, when you look at college football the way it is right now, we talked about the playoff system. And Syracuse isn't in it right now. It's not to say that they won't be in the future. But the college football playoff right now, this is the first season we're having it. You have to win two games to be the number one team in the country outright. There's no more 1-2, and Utah went undefeated and didn't get respect, and so they have a piece of the crown even though they don't get the trophy. And TCU gets a piece of the crown, but they don't get the trophy. And Boise State had a heck of a season, but they don't play in a tough conference, so they don't get a trophy. Now we're saying, you know what? We're going to put this committee together. We talked about the criteria. There's so many things that go into it. And there's people probably sitting in a room arguing over what's more than this and what counts more than that. And don't forget this. I think it's working better now. And now we have four teams. So if you're the number one team in the country, congratulations. Doesn't matter. You got to go out there and beat number four. And then you got to play whoever makes it from 2-3 and see what happens. You're a proponent for having more teams. I'm a proponent for having more teams. I don't want a bracket where there's 64 teams because football will be playing past the Super Bowl. But there needs to be, I think, a system where you have to win four games, five games to define yourself as the national champion. Just because the TCUs and the Baylors and the Ohio States and the Alabamas and the Mississippi States, there's so many teams that creep in. Even Duke. I think if Duke got put in the college playoff system, they could upset somebody at any day. So, in Virginia Tech, you saw what they did with Ohio State. So, I think having four teams is good, but I think it doesn't give the element of having the true underdog. So, you want more, I want more. How many would you be comfortable having? Because we've thrown 8, 10, 12, 16 out there. What do you think would be best for college football moving forward?
I mean, anywhere between 12 and 16 teams with the top four teams all getting a bye because they've earned the right to be able to be, like, you know, to be the number one team. So now they get a bye, so the other teams fight it out. Fight it out, now they're in a position to be able to play those teams. So I think anywhere between 12 to 16 teams I'd be comfortable with is the first four teams, the 1, 2, 3, 4 are all going to buy, and then they play the successive weeks. So I think four games tops would be the most or like the team play going to the playoffs, just like the NFL does it. You know, Division II does it, Division I AA does it also, you know, so that's what I would love to see. You know, I eventually want to see it get up to 12 to 4, the 16 teams, and right now we wouldn't have to be having this conversation because all the teams right now, because Ohio State's going to be on the outside looking in. But right now, I think Ohio State's playing some of the best football in college football right now, and they have an outside shot of winning it. Just like last year, Michigan State was playing some of the best football, you know, in the land. You know, they didn't have the opportunity because, you know, they were ranked number four in the country. So I think it'll be a more interesting concept and idea once they get more teams. And I like the simple fact that they put human error and human nature back into the whole judging system of of football in the playoff system, because you can't sit there and randomly select the computer to tell you how a team's going to fare. I mean, I can sit there and turn a video game on and have the Dallas Cowboys play the New England Patriots and sit there and watch the game play itself, and then you know, that's human error. We're not human. We're not computers. We're human. So putting the human mindset of simply the simple fact that Alabama is the best team in the land. Oregon is probably the second best team in the land right now, the way they play. You know what? Florida State, the way they've been playing, they should be third. And Mississippi State deserves to be right where they are. It's exactly where it should be right now, and that's just human nature thinking.
That coming from Rob Drummond, Syracuse CFL and the NFL, talking about college football playoffs. Syracuse hoping to be there at some point in the near future, but for right now, I think there's a lot of discussion, and the SEC... One thing I don't really understand is a lot of people get upset when the SEC is always at the top of the rankings, but if you're upset at the SEC, you got to be upset with greatness, because winning, playing a tough schedule, getting the heck beat out of you and still coming out of it alive, there's no conference like the SEC, and that's the truth of the matter of it all. The ACC's trying to get there, the Big 12, as well as some of the other conferences, the Pac-12 and the Big 10 trying to do it, but when you have the SEC with all but one team almost eligible for a bowl game, it says a lot about you. The ACC is pretty close behind. Rob Drummond and myself, Dan Storr, will be back. I'm going to break down this bracket thing and see if it's physically possible. I'm going to do a little math here. You know all about math and algorithms and everything, so maybe we can break down this bracket. We'll be back to talk about Syracuse live from Borio's Restaurant. Even though Syracuse has two games to go and no bowl season this time around, I think that there's some things that we have to take a look at, some respect that has to be given, as well as my conversation with Paul Chris, the head coach of the Pittsburgh Panthers, is coming up, and Syracuse Scott Schaefer, him and I spoke earlier on today, and I'll be bringing you that conversation as well coming up here from Borio's Restaurant.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
Welcome back here to Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, live from Borio's Restaurant with Rob Drummond of Syracuse CFL and the NFL. Also the man that is responsible for creating RAPS, which is a system that looks at players from all around the country, ages 13 to 18, for all different sports, football, basketball, volleyball, everything, soccer, lacrosse. And with what you do, quite possibly in the very near future, your system of RAPS, with Nike not having Spark anymore and a lot of things going away, the RAPS system, which was created by Rob Drummond sitting next to me right now, may be the marquee system that all recruits use around the country and around the world. You've already put stuff up into Canada. You have different people running RAPS throughout the continental United States. And you created this because you wanted to help children. And I think that we need to start there, live from Borio's. Once again, Wake Up Call with Dan Satora, Rob Drummond and Dan Satora, myself, here with the man that created something that is so strong and so powerful when you dreamt up Raps and you dreamt up this system and you wanted to help kids, did you ever think that it would come to a point where you would be a guy that at some point in your lifetime people are going to look to, the Nick Sabans of the world, the Jimbo Fishers of the world, the Jim Boeheims of the world, the Mike Krzyzewskis of the world, are going to go to Rob Drummond and say, who's the best guy out there?
Personally, I didn't create it for fame, notoriety, things of that nature. You know, when I first created the system, my whole first process and the reason I created it was the simple fact of helping children. You know, there are a lot of very athletic, very talented, very gifted children out there that get overlooked. And I basically created a system of reps for the overlooked kid. Everybody knows who the superstars are. The kids who are in high school, 6'3", you know, 235 pounds, they can run 4'40", have a 40-inch vertical jump. You know, they're easy to see. You know, they're very hard to miss. What about the little kid who may be 5'9", 5'10", you know, 140 pounds, but has a heart of gold, you know, and is very, very athletic? Those kids get overlooked. So now, I mean, it was a system created for those kids in mind. I always call it the diamond in the rough. I always wanted to take that kid out there who had the heart, the desire, the will to be able to go out there and perform and do his best, but never got noticed. So these were the kids that was created for.
So when you look at what the system was created for, like you said, the unknowns, the kids that don't get an opportunity, the kids that aren't a 5-star, 4-star, and all that ridiculousness that I don't even know by. How many kids do you feel you've been able to help at this point, even from being a personal trainer? Are there some of those stories where you feel like you've been able to get a kid on the map through Raps and through what you've been able to do with training?
I mean, thousands of kids, I can honestly sit here and say, I've been doing this for a long time now. I've been retired since 2003, and it's what, 2014 now, and I've been working in the system for 10, 11 years. But, you know, just a simple fact of being able to go out there, and what I tell these kids all the time, you know, it's just an outline. I remember getting into college my first year and starting as a freshman. Starting as a freshman was the hardest thing I ever had to do, but the simple fact that I didn't know how to adjust to college. Here I am, an 18-year-old, snotty-nosed, former high school kid, and Coach Mack throws me in his first game as a running back. And I remember just getting caught up so much between school and trying to socialize and trying to play football. It just got overwhelming. And I remember my academic advisor, who took the time, Terry McDonald, you know, just took the time to sit down and basically gave me an outline on how to be successful, not just in school, but in society, but in football also. And I remember sitting there kind of telling myself, it's like, you know, wow, the simple fact that she gave me an outline, I could follow that outline and help me out so much and save me. All I'm trying to do now is give these young kids an outline on how to be successful in life. You know, I can't go home to these children, but I can give them an outline like I was given an outline to be successful in life. And it's up to these young children, especially this day and age, to go out there and apply it. They have to apply it. I mean, I can give as much as I can. I can't do the work for them, but I can give them an outline from what they do, what they show me as young athletes, and tell them, you know what you need to be successful? Do this, and you'll be fine.
When you look at having a system, you created the algorithm, the mathematics of it all. I was very proud of myself that I created the bracket for the college football playoff here if we had 12 teams. You watched me when you're bringing all your algorithms and crazy mathematics that you're able to do. I was very proud of this. I'm going to take this home, I'm going to frame it, and I might give it to you for Christmas. I might do something like that. So I'm going to be proud of what I did here, but three games, if you're a top four team in college football, you'd have to play three games to win a championship. You have to play four if you're any team ranked 5 through 12. I think that's a fair system to look at. I think 12 teams would work because you only have a single bye, and then they can move forward from there. So stop nodding your head. Okay, it's been a long week. I know it's Wednesday, but every team struggles, okay? So the team inside my brain for this struggled a little bit, but it's okay. So we figured it out. There's 12 teams. Should we mail this in to the college football playoff and say, you know what, let's get this going? When should it be done? Should it be done while it's fresh, while the college football playoff said, let's do four teams now in a playoff system? This is the first year doing it in 2014. So do you run to them now and say, you got to make it 12? before it gets crazy? I mean, when do you implement it? Because I would think if they're already in the mind to change, the time to do it is now instead of 5-10 years from now, where it might be 20 years before they make it bigger.
The sad thing is with the NCAA, they already have this system in their head. The exact same system that we presented, that we drove over here, is the exact same thing, the scenario they came up with. The problem is the NCAA is thinking about the most lucrative way to maximize the most amount of potential money they could possibly make, because that's what the NCAA is. The NCAA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the government are three crooked branches of whatever you can call on this planet. And they always think of the most ways to maximize their potential and whatever money they can gain. Will they eventually get to it? Yes, they will. But will it fatten their pockets? Yes, they will. Until they can fatten their pockets with the most potential, best way for doing this, they should stay dormant.
I will say that in the time it took me to create the 12-team bracket for the NCAA, if they wanted to take our idea of the college football playoff, I bet you it took longer for the NCAA to figure out 1-4. I think that that's fair. Because it seems like the NCAA, I mean, they know how to make money, but they don't necessarily do the smartest, most accurate, most intelligent things for the community. And speaking on that, whether you're a Syracuse fan or a fan of any team, it seems very hard to not talk about what's going on in the NFL. Ray Rice, with everything that happened with domestic violence, Adrian Peterson with child abuse. Now it's become the NFL versus the NFLPA. And I think, and I came out and I said this on my social media for Wake Up Call with Dan Tatora, that we need to stay focused. You and I talked about this before. It's about not beating children. It's about not having domestic violence, man on woman, woman on man, woman on woman. Doesn't matter. Domestic violence, child abuse is wrong in and of itself. There is no right to it. There will be no right to it. But what I think we're starting to lose now is, well, what are the rights of Ray Rice? What are the rights of Adrian Peterson? Roger Goodell can't do this. He can't keep them out because they haven't been charged with anything, or a case isn't done, or they're not in jail. So, to me, I feel like the NFLPA is saying, hey, guess what? Roger Goodell isn't famous right now. People aren't, he's infamous, but not famous. People don't love him. He doesn't have a high approval rating. So let's say we're the NFLPA and let's stand up for the players and take the popularity back, but we're losing focus of what's really going on. If I was the commissioner of the NFL, right, wrong, or indifferent, Ray Rice would not be in the NFL. Adrian Peterson would not be in the NFL. Greg Hardy, who allegedly beat his ex-girlfriend, would not be in the NFL. And there would be no conversation. But now I think it's the NFL versus the NFLPA in a struggle for popularity, and we're losing sight of everything that matters. Are you seeing that happen as well?
I think the problem is, and I don't think it's a problem, I know it's a problem. When a year ago, you can have an NFL owner like Jim Irsay get pulled over for DWI, get found with $30,000 worth of prescription drugs on him, and only get a $500,000 fine. You know, it's just you can't be one way to the players, the other way to the owners. You know, at the same point, you know, he should have been like disbanded from being able to participate. This is the same thing they did, you know, to the LA Clippers, the head coach. You know what? For a year, you're banned from being around your team, because that's a crime you got charged with. You know, and you were found guilty, and you pleaded to, you know, the simple fact you have $30,000 for a prescription drug value, and you got caught with a DWI. Why is he only fined $500,000, which is a kick in the bucket to him? You know, and no games of anything of that nature. How fair is that? You know, so you look at it now. It's like, you know, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But you can't treat the players one way, and then when the owner gets start doing the same thing or something just as vile, treat them differently.
If you're in the NFL Players Association, do you step in for Ray Rice, and do you step in for Adrian Peterson, two people that have abused other people, abused women, abused children? Do you step in for them and say, well, we have to represent the players, and we don't feel like they've been handled correctly, so you got to let them back in? Do you become kind of the defense attorney if you're the NFLPA, or if you were Demoris Smith, would you say, you know what, Ray Rice, Adrian Peterson, I don't want that blood on my hands. I don't want to deal with you. How would you you handle it, because they're talking about players' rights, and I'm talking about two players that I don't know if they have rights in the NFL right now.
Sitting here all day and all along, go back and forth about what is right and what is wrong. You know what? As I said before, we sat here in the same place and talked about it before. You know what? It's a culture of people growing up and what they saw growing up that they thought was right. You know what? And you have to get them at an early childhood to try and, you know, desensitize or ingrained in them that what they're doing is wrong. You know, we can sit here and say we had a president before, and Bill Clinton did the things that he did. You know, everybody on his wife, you know, sat there, you know, lied and everything, but everyone just brushed that off also. So we can sit here and say no one's perfect. People make mistakes. When you can get to someone early enough, you know, you can get mentors and things of that nature and programs to teach these young men that this is right, you know, that this is wrong, you know, and that's where it needs to start. But to punish them for a lifetime for things that they feel were okay, that they saw growing up, I think is unjust, because of the simple fact that we're not teaching them anything. If we sit there and punish someone for something that's, you know, according to the law, you know, neither one of them was charged with anything, or they pleaded out. So our laws, our laws forgave them, and they're paying their punishment. I mean, Adrian Peterson, you know, that's probably what was done to him growing up. So, and knowing the rest of his parents did anything of that nature, now I myself was spanking, you know, growing up. I don't do it to my children, you know, because I'm a big, strong man, but it's like, you know, I learned that. It wasn't something that was instilled in me. If I didn't learn that, maybe I would do my children right now. I don't know that. But it's something that someone taught to me that was wrong to do, so I don't do it. So it's something we have to get to these young men, you know, before they get to the mindset of being, you know, bigger than life itself, which basically means the All-Americans, you know, the NFL players, all the men in the world. So it has to be taught there on the age.
What do we do right now? If you and I were the only two people in the world on a committee, and Ray Rice was sitting right here, and Adrian Peterson was sitting next to him, what do we do with these guys and their NFL career?
The first thing I have to do is find out their family background, you know, and how they grew up, and, you know, the structure they grew up. Did they grow up in a two-parent home? Did they grow up with money? Did they grow up, you know, in the inner city? Did they grow up in the suburbs? I would need to know so much more about these young men to sit there and dictate and finally, you know, figure out what path they need to take. You know, and at the same point, you know, at the end of the day, we all have to be human. No one is better than anybody else. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care if you have $80 billion sitting in your pocket. It doesn't matter. We're all going to be buried in the same ground, you know, and go see the same guy. And your guy, because you have $80 million, is no different than mine. You know, so the simple fact is, just try to be a human being, try and be a good person, and find out there are right and wrong things in this world. You know, and you can give an opportunity to be a role model for so many young people. And the one thing I always tell myself throughout the course of the day is, when I go out there, is would my children appreciate what it is I do throughout the course of the day? You know, do I get upset sometimes? Yes, I do. I'm a human being. But you know what? I know the difference between doing something that's, you know, that's vile, or doing something that's just out of anger and out of spite. When I do it out of anger and spite, it's to myself. You know, when I do it out of bile, I mean, I don't do it at all, because I know it's wrong. So it's just a learning process. Every single day you're learning. I don't care if you're, you know, you're the homeless person sitting in the street, or you're a multi-trillionaire sitting somewhere in Bangladesh collecting money. You're learning every single day. And at the end of the day, it's just about being a good person.
Without the idea there,
so many NFL players find it hard to, and not just NFL, any professional football player, playing a sport that people say barbaric or gladiator, we've called it before. You've been able to assimilate back into culture. You have been able to not think, you know, I got to kill the person across from me anymore. Michael Strahan has found a way to assimilate back into culture. There's guys that can do it. And I bring up Michael Strahan because he's a defensive end. I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, offensive and defensive line, you're getting pounded more than anybody else on the NFL field. How were you able to get back into culture, and was it because of how you were raised that you were able to do it? Because some NFL players find it very difficult to be able to just say, okay, you know what?
No.
I'm not going to get hit 70 times anymore. I'm not going to run through people and want to hurt people and want to put them on the ground.
No, I don't want my shoulder.
I'm going to be a doctor now, or I'm going to own my own business. You figured out how to do it. Some guys haven't yet. How did you do it, and was it because of your environment growing up?
I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with my environment, you know, environment growing up. You know, it's funny. All the kids that train nowadays, I sit here and tell them. It's like, you know, jokingly, you see me as a nice guy, but I'm probably the meanest person you've ever met before in your life, because I'm pretty much a Tasmanian devil. I just hide it very well. I know when to turn it on and when to turn it off. As a football player, I could be a Tasmanian devil on the field, and I can destroy anything in front of me. But as a person living in society, I can't do that. You know why? Because it's not acceptable. And that's not something that I would want my children to aspire to be also, you know, from them. So I would never do anything within myself that I wouldn't expect them to do also. So I have to lead by example. And that's the one thing that these young men who sit out there, who basically have been told all their life, you know, that how great you are, how good you are, how much money you're going to make, you know, how much money you're going to score, you know, the fame, the greatness. And no one sat there and taught these young men how to be gentlemen. And that's a problem, because you get all these people, especially some family members, to sit there and all they see is the limelight, all they see is the glory, all they see is the money. So they bypass all these indiscretions that they're doing. I sat there and talked to a couple fans after the Florida State game in a Prince bar of mine, and all they sat there and talked about how great Jameson Winston was, how he won the Heisman Trophy, you know, how he's leading them to an undefeated season this year. And I was like, you know what, look at this young man. Take a step back and just look at what he's done off the field and how he's acting. And they seem to care less about that. And I was like, you know what, that's the problem with society. You sit there and you want to praise this man who's done so many bad things instead of sitting there educating this man to make him a better person. That's the problem.
When we look at someone that's trying to educate players in the right way, one of those guys, I believe, is Scott Schaefer. I know is Scott Schaefer because I've been around him long enough on a personal and professional level to know that. And we've had conversations about that. So I think moving into Scott and my conversation with him today, I think it's very fitting in what we're talking about right now. And when I was talking with Scott Schaefer earlier on before the show, he said to me, anytime you're managing 115 kids in this day and age, you're going to have all kinds of issues you're trying to deal with. And a direct quote from him, and he said, quote, we don't have many off-the-field issues. They go to class. You know, and I think that that's something that's big about Syracuse, as well as some of the other schools out there, that, you know, when I talked to Paul Chris from the Pitt Panthers, they go to class. When you talk to the Duke Blue Devils, I mean, when you go to Duke, it's a good education. You're going to go to class. You have to go to class. So, continuing on with what Scott Schaefer said, he said, you know, quote, one of the better schools in the nation, speaking on Syracuse, that you get both an unbelievable education and play in the ACC, end quote. I've been pleased with the demeanor of the team and the way they continue to fight. Winning or losing, our kids continue to play. They keep me feeling young. Those are all direct quotes from my conversation with Scott today, and I think that says a lot. And he also said, when I talked to them about Paul Christ of Pittsburgh, who in the last two seasons, the two games have been decided by 2 points. 1 point in one game, 1 point in the other game. Syracuse up against Pittsburgh when Scott Schaefer was the head coach last year, and Paul Christ, and then back when Paul Christ was at Wisconsin and Schaefer was at Michigan, they went up against each other, and he said, quote, he understands football is just a tool, end quote, stating that Scott Schaefer uses football, yeah, you want to win. I think every Syracuse fan wants to win. But he said, he's a football coach to use football as a tool, a vessel, to teach people how to be good, upstanding citizens, good fathers, good sons, good brothers, good friends, good husbands, good workers, good business owners, good doctors, good janitors, whatever you are, good pilots. And I think that that's something that goes unnoticed. I think when Syracuse loses, people forget. And like you were saying, when Florida State wins, people forget. They forget about Jameis Winston. They forget about alleged rape charges. They forget about what he's doing on campus with BB guns. They forget about what's going on with signatures. Bobby Petrino cheating on his wife. Now he's at Louisville. People forget about it because he's a successful coach at Louisville, because he's back in a place where people loved him before. And with Scott Schaefer, I think in some crazy way, he's not a rapist. He's not an adulterer. He's not covering up for his kids not going to class. He's doing all the right things, yet he is forgotten. So what can you say about Scott and some of the words that he said to me today, and what the heck is going on when you can be such a good leader and such a good motivator and such a good person, but if Syracuse is under 500, nobody cares?
At the end of the day, honestly, it's just sad, and I told my son this, you know, I could care less what you're going to be as an athlete, because 1% of the entire population ever goes to play pro sports. I would rather have an upstanding, good individual as a son who learned from somebody who taught them, from some knucklehead who went out there and played pro football, because at the end of the day, you're going to retire from that probably in 3 years anyway, and you're going to be a bad person. No, it's just sad. A simple fact around me is just that every time, because I'm around kids all day long, and it's fun for me to watch, these kids are so impressed with impressing me because they see I lead by example. You know what? I'm not perfect, but I always tell them I'm not perfect. But it's like, you know what? Be humble, always say thank you, say yes, sir, say no, sir. You're not better than anybody else. And when they sit there and they argue with each other, I was like, you know, you're never as good as you think you are. Besides, who cares? You know, at the end of the day, you probably may never go pro. If you do, great, I'll applaud you. If you don't, great, I'll applaud you. And the same thing, at the end of the day, I may sit here and be Robert Drummond, Syracuse University, NFL football player, things of that nature. You know, that's going to the wayside. Whenever I wake up in the morning, I wake up and I go in the mirror and I look in the mirror as I'm brushing my teeth, I'm Robert Drummond, the father. And I have to lead by example. Not only am I the father of my two children, there's a lot of kids who I come and see, who come and see me every single day, and I have to sit here and educate and teach these kids, not just to be upstanding citizens, but to be good people. You know what? And it's not hard at all. You know why it's not hard? Because I lead by example. So if I do it myself, you know, it's ingrained in me. It's an outline. We sat here and talked about it earlier today. I give them an outline by how I live as to how they can be successful in life and do the things they need to do.
When you look at having an outline and doing things that are respected, Paul Chris, the Pitt Panthers head coach, talking to me about Scott Schaefer today and said, quote, got a lot of respect for him and how he goes about the coaching profession. End quote. He also said, in a quote, I've been able to go to get around Schaefer and talk about those things with him, end quote, about being just fortunate. Because that's what Schaefer talked to me about. He said, listen, Paul Christ and I know that we're just fortunate to be head football coaches. We're fortunate to do what we love. We're fortunate to have a tool to teach kids. We're fortunate to have college football as a vessel to put all these kids on that boat and get them to a better life. When you hear words from Paul Christ about Schaefer, about the bigger picture, even though Syracuse is a rival of Pitt, and Pitt is the team that Syracuse has played the second most times in history of their football team, right under Penn State. Even though Pitt is such a huge rival, when you hear Paul Christ and Scott Schaefer respect each other for being teachers of life and not just football, you can't help but find respect for Paul Christ and what he's doing, I would imagine.
I mean, he's a lot like Coach Schaefer. Over the last 2 years, I've actually been fortunate enough to take my eldest son down to the Pittsburgh football camp. I had a chance to sit there and meet Coach Chris, you know, and he's exactly like Coach Schaefer. You know, he took the time to sit there and explain to the kids, talk to the kids, you know, he wasn't better than them. You know, it's just the simple fact that, I mean, the one reason that I always pride myself, and I always say, you know, and even smile, is that every single person I ever talk to always tells me, but you know what, you just take the time to be an average, ordinary person. I was like, what makes me different than anybody else? You know, yes, God gave me the time to be able to go out there and play the game of football, but at the end of the day, I'm flesh and blood, just like everybody else. You know, I wake up in the morning, do the best I can, go to sleep, wake up and do it all over again. You know, just because I play the game of football, it makes me no better than anybody else. And that's the one thing I try and teach these young kids.
You feel like you've seen every place in Central New York, but unless you've been to Borio's Restaurant, you've never truly seen Central New York the way that it should be seen. No matter what the season, out on Oneida Lake, there is no better view than Borio's Restaurant. From banquets to getting something to eat to Sunday brunch, Borio's Restaurant offers authenticity to Central New York. It offers a difference to Central New York. Whether it's your anniversary or a graduation party, a bridal shower, a wedding, Borio's Restaurant is where people go to have the experiences of a lifetime, with the owners being a part of your meal, being a part of your experience, of your time there. The owners care, the local people that always come back care, and the people that come in from out of state just to have a feel of what Central New York means to them, they care. Go to a place where people care about you, and your experience will never be equaled by any other place. The best view in town is at Borio's Restaurant. Head there now, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York. Open Tuesday through Sunday, and remember Sunday brunch. Borio's Restaurant, 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York.
When you look at having a situation like Pittsburgh and BC at home, and obviously they're longtime rivals of Syracuse in the Northeast football, and Doug Maroney had talked about it. When you have them both at home then this season, then you have them both on the road, would you like to see Syracuse kind of do a one-and-one? Hey, we'll take Pitt at home, then we'll go on the road, and then we'll do opposite with BC? Because it seems like for a Syracuse fan, well, football is great when it goes to the end of November after Thanksgiving, but football is terrible when the last game at home is November 8th.
Yeah, I think let's just put that up. At least have one of those games on. You know, it is what it is. As I said before, it's a learning experience. They'll understand that now. No. And then hopefully they'll right the ship. But, you know, I think Coach Schaefer is the right way for the job, because you know what? The seniors may not have won, played in a bowl game this year, but I guarantee you what, because of Coach Schaefer, it'll be better than them and go out to the world.
And I give a lot of credit to what Schaefer did do, because as a coordinator and as a head coach in his first season, mind you, which is very hard for a coach to do, these seniors now have already found their way into a bowl game, and they've already had experience, and they've already had one heck of a career at Syracuse, even if they're not playing in a national championship. For Rob Drummond of Syracuse CFL and the NFL, and myself, Dan Zatora, of Wake Up Call with Dan Zatora, here from Borio's Restaurant. We're here, obviously, here going into Pitt. We'll be here going into BC, and we might be doing some special shows when it comes to other things going on in the NFL and college football. We thank Borio's, Marty, Chuck, Tony, and the whole Borio's staff for all the great work that they do. 8891 McDonald's Parkway in Cicero, New York, for those listening in. Make sure you come out to Borio's, open all year round except for Mondays. And I know, as always, Rob, thank you for enlightening myself and people that are listening in, and for giving me an opportunity to get some of these topics out and really dive into them a little bit more. I appreciate it.
Thank you.